Hello, friends, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. We're glad you've joined us for another month here in the advanced class. It's April 1st, so hopefully you've got your April magazines in hand and open to pages 10 and 11 as we start the month with a science article. I'm your teacher, Josh, and I'm joined in the studio by some science fans. We have Simon here. Hi, Simon.
Hey, Josh. I always like these science articles because it takes me back to my youth.
That's right. And Lois is here. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Josh. Glad to be here. I didn't like science in my youth, but I like it as an adult.
Oh, wow.
Very much. More interested in science, maybe, in the last decade or two. So it's an enjoyable article for me.
Great. Well, we're glad you could be here with us. The title of our lesson sounds a little scary, Simon. Seeking the Ebolas of the Future.
That's right.
Why would you want to seek an Ebola?
Well, I guess it's a reminder that this isn't just a science article. It's really an article about public health. Mm-hmm. Because that's why they're seeking these Ebolas of the future. In recent news, of course, we've heard a lot about Ebola, a terrible disease that has broken out in Africa and has caused all kinds of death and illness. And so here, they're looking for future diseases that will cause those kinds of problems before they cause problems.
That's right. Trying to get ahead of the problem, right, Lois?
That's right. Right. Basically forecasting and seeing where it's going to be possibly next or if it's going to break out. And as Simon was mentioning, it's in the continent of Africa, West Africa. I want to be really specific with that so we don't label the whole continent of having this. And we have it beginning in Guinea, actually, in December 2013. And then it spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone. So it's good to know for our readers exactly what where we are geographically.
And it did stay primarily in that region.
That's correct.
There were a few cases where people traveled from Liberia to Texas, we'll mention. Remember, there was a doctor in New York that contracted it because he was there fighting
That's
Ebola.
That's right. And one either in UK or Europe, I believe, as well.
And a woman, a nurse who came back with it as well. Yeah. Those are always gut-wrenching stories,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was a really tough story, that one. I'm remembering it now, Josh.
Well, obviously, we're going to talk about some serious topics here and talk about some really brave men and women that are out trying to get ahead of these diseases. But we're also going to talk about some really interesting science and medical vocabulary today and tomorrow, right, Simon?
Yeah, that's right. There will be all kinds of interesting words, especially for people who are interested in health topics or avoiding disease, but also for people who are maybe medical professionals. Lots of good words for you.
What does our deck say, Lois?
Our deck says, scientists step up work to find and contain potentially deadly viruses. So we've got two words there. One is a featured word in our vocabulary focus, step up. And we can see that that means to make something more effective or to increase the size or speed of something. And we also have the word potentially deadly viruses. Potentially, we could also use the word likely or possibly.
Mm-hmm. And what is a virus, Simon?
Well, a virus, of course, is a microorganism. The common word people often use when they're learning English is germ.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of one of these little living things that makes you sick. And viruses, of course, are very, very small, much smaller than bacteria or the things we usually call germs. And they're a cause of a lot of the diseases that people get.
And they're not all deadly, right?
No, they're not all deadly. In fact, I picked up some type of virus coming traveling in January, and I got a really bad flu. It wasn't life-threatening or anything, and I think I picked it up from about three passengers sitting behind me. But I did get a fever, and I was getting a bit nervous when I got out of the airport.
Oh,
were
no.
they going to quarantine me? You know, because Ebola was really in the news then. So, but yeah, you can pick up these germs, and they can really appear as quite the virus sometimes.
And they're not always easy to fight or to treat once you catch one, right?
That's right. They're sort of the microorganism that is sort of not as well understood as many of the others. Things like bacteria, they're bigger, and so we've been able to see them for a long time and study them. Viruses, again, are very, very small. And in a lot of cases, they don't even make people sick.
Right.
And so, you know, we haven't paid nearly as much attention to them in sort of medical research and stuff until much more recently.
So Ebola, as Lois mentioned, broke out, about 2 years ago. Were there famous viruses before Ebola?
Yes, a famous one in Asia that actually traveled to my home city of Toronto called SARS.
Mm.
That's a very famous one, and we were faced with that in this part of the world in the spring of 2003.
That's right.
There are many others, though, too. I mean, people know the flu, and even Ebola has been in the news for a long time, you know, from time to time.
Yes, right.
And then if we know our history, we also know about the really bad influenza in North America in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Killed lots of people.
Yes. Yep.
Sometimes you hear about hepatitis, which is caused by a virus. It's sort of a liver disease that affects people. Sometimes you get it from even things like drinking contaminated water or eating food that's been affected by the virus.
So we have some other good medical terms we'll talk about today and tomorrow. We're glad you've joined us. We don't have any April Fool's jokes for you today.
No, in fact, April Fool's Day is my daughter's birthday, so I don't usually pull April Fool's jokes. But I had a baby on April Fool's Day.
And the doctors weren't kidding.
And the doctors weren't kidding. And she wouldn't wait till April 2nd.
Right. Well, we're going to start our lesson today and begin our reading.
Seeking the Ebolas of the future. Scientists step up work to find and contain potentially deadly viruses. Headlines about alarming new viruses have been hard to escape. Last year, Dallas confronted its first cases of Ebola, chikungunya, and enterovirus D68. Many other threats lurk a plane ride away. In response, scientists are stepping up efforts to prevent the next pandemic. Teams of researchers have fanned out across the globe, trapping bats in China, rats in Vietnam, and monkeys in West Africa in an effort to identify dangerous viruses before they cross into humans. Others are working in labs, screening hundreds of thousands of compounds to disarm the pathogens.
Thank you, Steve. Some good words there. Maybe some challenging words as well. Hopefully you stuck with us and we'll continue to add some of these to your vocabulary, and others will be hard to ever use again, probably in English conversation, but we're going to discuss them anyway. How does our lesson start, Simon?
Well, it starts by talking about headlines, which of course are the titles you find on news stories. And here specifically it says, headlines about alarming new viruses have been hard to escape. And so what that means is there's been a lot of news lately about new viruses.
That's right. And they started, and you mentioned Ebola wasn't new, but it did sort of creep up fairly quickly over the last 2 years in those parts of Africa.
Yeah, that's right. For people who have sort of studied biology or medical professionals, I think people like that tend to be more sensitive to news stories about these things. But Ebola, I guess people first started kind of talking about it in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Every little while, there's a little outbreak of it somewhere in Africa usually, and it gets a little bit of news, but nothing like this most recent outbreak.
And if you watch enough movies, miniseries, TV shows, they drop that word Ebola every so often, and it's breaking out somewhere in the movie, and it adds a suspense.
Sure. It's got some scary connotations.
Exactly.
I think of like a monkey running across a jungle carrying this virus.
Wow, you saw the same movie I did.
I think I might have. Yeah. Well, this time it wasn't a monkey. It was a human that brought it from Liberia to Dallas, which is a big city in Texas. Not the capital, but one of the biggest cities in Texas. And it was confronted with its first case ever of Ebola. When you're confronted, it means like it's right in your face. You can't escape it. And what were those viruses, Simon?
Yeah, there were three of them that Dallas found itself dealing with. Ebola, chikungunya, and enterovirus D68.
Wow. That is a specialized term if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through those. Ebola, of course, we've been talking about. Chikungunya is a virus that makes people sick in a way that looks like they have dengue fever, which is a much more common disease that's spread by mosquitoes. It's a little different, though, than dengue fever. The third one is enterovirus D68. And enterovirus is, of course, it's a type of a group of viruses, I suppose. It says here, you often find them in respiratory secretions, which means they're found in people's lungs and also in their digestive systems.
Even in sneezes, right?
That's right. So they can be sneezed out. Mm-hmm. They're very common, though, especially in, I don't know how we say this on the radio, bathroom stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very dangerous viruses found their way to Dallas, and it says many other threats lurk a plane ride away.
Right.
You mentioned being nervous that you were going to be quarantined in an airport, and I think this is the big fear that people have, that these viruses are going to spread around the world from just a single passenger.
Exactly. I got a fever while on the aircraft, and I could feel that it was rising. And, I'm thinking, I just want to get off the airplane and go to the hotel room and get better.
That's also the problem, though, right? I mean, Lois was afraid of being quarantined, so she was probably trying to look normal as she walked through the airport, trying to avoid being checked for the fever. And that's exactly the opposite of what they want. Probably, if you want to quarantine people, you should offer them all expense-paid stays in 5-star hotels and make it a very pleasant experience so people are eager to be quarantined if they're sick.
Good point.
I did head to a 5-star hotel, though, and I did get better.
There you go. It works. See?
Good to know. Well, it says in response, so meaning in response to all these diseases lurking away, scientists are stepping up efforts. And Lois taught us what stepping up means. It means they're working harder and increasing their effectiveness, hopefully, to prevent what, Simon?
Well, the next pandemic, which is an interesting word. The root there comes from the word epidemic, which, of course, means a breakout of a disease. A group of people who are sick with a disease in one area. Pandemic, then, is talking about a breakout of a disease in many areas. So a spread of a disease across the world. And that's really what they're worried about.
So epidemics are bad. Pandemics are worse.
That's right.
Got it. So they are trying to prevent the next pandemic.
That's right.
And it says teams of researchers have done what, Lois?
Teams of researchers have fanned out across the globe, trapping bats in China, rats in Vietnam, and monkeys in West Africa. And this is in an effort to identify dangerous viruses before they cross into humans. And that word fanned out, a lot of our readers might not be familiar with that. We don't use it that often. And if you check our vocabulary focus, it tells us for a group of people to move in different directions from a single point. So they're spreading out.
That's right. You can almost picture like when you open a fan, it kind of spreads out right across your hand. And that's how people are spreading out across the globe. So they're not just focused in Africa or West Africa, where we mentioned Ebola got its start. They're also in parts of Asia and Europe, too, right, Simon?
Yeah, it's interesting sort of what they're doing when they spread out, too. They're trapping bats and rats and monkeys. And the reason they're doing that, of course, as it says, they're trying to identify viruses before they cross to humans, which is an interesting idea. When they say cross to humans, of course, they're talking about how these are diseases or viruses that affect those different animals. And when people come in contact with those different sick animals, sometimes people also become sick. The virus changes to make people sick.
Right. You know, I was doing some studying and it was saying, you know, domestic animals, wild animals, and then humans. And I was thinking, domestic animals, really? You know, I always associate domestic animals. The only thing you can get is rabies if the animal hasn't had the shots. The people that own the animal haven't taken it to the vet to get the shots they need.
But there's diseases that even domestic animals can carry. And that's the verb there, right? The carrying of these diseases. Others, he says, are working in labs screening hundreds of what, Simon?
Well, hundreds of thousands of compounds. Compounds, of course, are just basically chemicals, different chemical combinations.
Substances.
That's right. To disarm the pathogens. Pathogens there being things that cause disease. So basically what they're saying here is they're screening, or they're looking at and testing and evaluating thousands, hundreds and thousands of different things that could be used as medicines against these different things that cause disease.
All right. So it's a multi-pronged approach, we could say.
Mm, yes,
some people are looking at what viruses can spur, can come out of science. Others are looking at who could carry those viruses and how we can get ahead. What would they do with a bat if they found out that it's carrying a nasty virus?
Well, I would think they would first find out, of course, where the bat, where they got the bat, where the bat had been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find out that oftentimes, you know, they tag animals that are associated sometimes with diseases and see where they travel, right? So you might have tagged it in this part of West Africa, but you now find it in this other part of either West Africa or Central Africa.
Mm. And then hopefully you kill them all.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Keep them out of human contact.
Yeah, I think probably the main thing they do is actually try to get samples of the virus.
Right.
Try to understand how the virus works a little better. Most living things use the same sorts of processes to reproduce and stay alive. So when you understand how a thing is working and staying alive, you can understand the various strengths and weaknesses that that species has. And that's good information if you're trying to fight it later.
And rats, we know, live in very close contact with humans. Sometimes really, really close contact.
And we don't realize it oftentimes, too. You're right, Josh. That's a good point.
But what about bats? Are they more prevalent in our lives than I'm realizing?
I think they are. They, sometimes you find bats. That's right.
I found a bat one time in the upstairs of my grandparents' farmhouse. And let me tell you, that was a scary event.
Scary because you thought it might have a deadly virus?
Scary because I obviously watched too many movies. I thought it was going to bite me. And yes, at that age, I probably thought, oh, if it bites me, it has a deadly virus.
But here in Asia, we don't always talk too much about bats, particularly in Taipei, I suppose. But, in a lot of places, bats are really kind of part of life. You find them upstairs in attics, the upstairs parts of houses. You find them in churches. You find them in all kinds of places where people aren't using it all the time. It's kind of quiet and dark. And of course, bats do often carry rabies, that disease that Lois mentioned before.
Right. I was visiting the Republic of Palau a few years ago. They actually eat bat, and they teach you all the many ways that you can prepare bat to eat it. So that was a new situation for me, a new experience. I had never known that people eat bat.
Did it taste like chicken?
You know what? I couldn't bring myself to taste it.
Oh, I understand.
Oh, dear.
Well, why don't we ask Steve to read our second column?
The Virus Hunters. Instead of chasing the last epidemic, which is how we practiced historically, we want to be proactive. To get ahead of the curve, said Dr. Jonah Madzit, a veterinary epidemiologist and director of PREDICT, a government-funded network of scientists who hunt viruses in disease hotspots around the world. In the last 5 years, PREDICT researchers, who work in 20 countries in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, have identified 800 new viruses. We have very little knowledge of what's in the wild, but that's where the Ebolas of the future are going to come from, said Mark Woolhouse, professor of infectious disease epidemiology at the University of Edinburgh. Nearly two-thirds of all new or re-emerging diseases are zoonotic, meaning they originate in animals, reports the U.S. Agency for International Development, which funds PREDICT. These diseases are the most dangerous to humans because our immune systems have not previously encountered them and are slow to fight them off. While humans and animals have always exchanged viruses, Woolhouse said the early 21st century is a perfect storm for emerging diseases. As populations boom and humans proliferate, they encroach on forests and encounter new forms of wildlife. They also travel more widely and frequently, spreading the germs they pick up.
So the title of our next section is The Virus Hunters. When I think of hunters, I'm usually thinking of someone chasing deer, right? Or rabbits, or birds, but virus hunters?
I guess they like lab work.
That's right. Instead of chasing the last epidemic, it says, which is how we practiced historically, we want to be what, Simon?
Well, they want to get ahead of the curve, which means they want to be proactive. Proactive, getting ahead of the curve, means get ahead of the problem. So you want to be prepared by the time the problem comes to be.
And that's from Jonna Mazet, a veterinary epidemiologist.
Ooh, great word, epidemiologist. And we have it in our specialized terms. And it means a medical scientist who deals with the incidence, distribution, and possible control of diseases and other factors relating to health. And, you know, I was doing a little bit research about this man and about PREDICT, which we talk about. And if any of our readers want to check out a little bit more, they can go to www.vetmed.ucdavis.edu.
And that's the headquarters of PREDICT?
Yeah, and it gives you a lot of information and tells you what they do, and there's a lot of information and research you might want to know for yourself.
Well, PREDICT, it says, is a government-funded network of scientists. And what do they do, Simon?
Well, that's very interesting. I looked this up on the internet. It seems that PREDICT is like a coordination center. And so what they do is they kind of connect different scientists who are working in different laboratories in different places, and they help them share information and kind of work together from a distance. I think the website that Lois just gave is actually probably one of the science labs that's working in the network, as opposed to the PREDICT Center itself. But PREDICT, it's important to remember, it's a network, not so much an organization.
Yeah, they refer to themselves as One Health Institute. So I thought that was kind of like on their deck. So PREDICT is One Health Institute.
I'm picturing like a SWAT team of scientists that are deployed around the world when viruses strike.
I don't think it's like that at all.
No.
I think it's more like a way to share your data.
A lot of lab work. And as Simon says, share your data.
Oh, well.
Yeah, to make sure, you know, you don't have like two groups of scientists doing the same thing. You know, that kind of thing?
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But we won't be seeing a TV show called PREDICT.
Well, we might. We might. You never know what Hollywood will do.
It's more like the medical lab work, CSI, but
CSI.
Actually really using scientists to the fullest, I guess.
Epidemiology.
Yes.
Isn't usually the star of television shows, but it is a very interesting subject.
Well, and they've been busy, haven't they? They're working in 20 countries, and they've identified 800 new viruses.
Right, in those 20 countries, it can all be found, Josh, in Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
So they're covering most of the globe. And we meet one of the professors involved with this, Mark Woolhouse. What does he have to say, Simon?
Well, he says, we have very little knowledge of what's in the wild. Right? And so I think that's very true. He's basically saying we don't know exactly what's out there until it gets into people. And that's because of this traditional approach they mentioned before. They said historically we've chased epidemics, meaning we wait until people get sick and then we figure out what's making them sick. In this case, they're trying to get ahead of the curve and be proactive. So they're trying to find out what viruses are actually not affecting humans yet, but might affect humans in the future.
Got it. And we learned that very interesting fact. Nearly two-thirds of all these new viruses are what, Lois?
Well, they're new or re-emerging diseases. So new diseases, of course, we know what that means. Mm-hmm. But re-emerging, they have had them before. They might have been dormant. Mm. And now they're appearing again.
They're making a comeback. And it says they're zoonotic. I had never heard of that word before, but it's very interesting. Related to the word zoo, obviously, relating to animals.
Yeah, animals. So specifically, these two-thirds of newer re-emerging diseases actually come from animals first and then cross over into humans.
And that's according to the U.S. Agency for International Development, which funds PREDICT.
Right.
And these diseases are the most dangerous to humans, these zoonotic diseases. Why, Simon?
Well, because our bodies aren't able to fight them. It says here specifically, our immune systems have not previously encountered them and are slow to fight them off. So when your body is exposed to a new sickness, your body, which is an amazing thing, comes up with a way to fight that new disease.
Almost like it has to recognize it, right? It has to recognize this new disease. It's never appeared before.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But if your body hasn't been exposed to it, it takes time for it to figure out how to fight it. And so that's basically the idea of getting a vaccine. You know, when you're a kid, the doctor gives you needles. It gives your body a chance to be exposed in a safe way to these different kinds of viruses.
Great. Well, let's talk more tomorrow about the relationship between man and animals and how we've existed together in a land filled with viruses. Hopefully you'll join us for day 2 of our science article. Until then, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.